Chapter 1. The last drops of the thunder shower had hardly ceased falling when the pedestrian stuffed his map into his pocket, settled his pack more comfortably on his tired shoulders, and stepped out from the shelter of a large chestnut tree into the middle of the road. A violent yellow sunset was pouring through a rift in the clouds to westward, but straight ahead over the hills the sky was the color of dark slate. Every tree and blade of grass was dripping, and the road shone like a river. The pedestrian wasted no time on the landscape, but set out at once with the determined stride of a good walker who has lately realized that he will have to walk farther than he intended. That indeed was his situation. If he had chosen to look back, which he did not, he could have seen the spire of Much Naderby, and, seeing it, might have uttered a malediction on the inhospitable little hotel which, though obviously empty, had refused him a bed. The place had changed hands since he last went for a walking tour in these parts. The kindly old landlord on whom he had reckoned had been replaced by someone whom the barmaid referred to as the lady, and the lady was apparently a British innkeeper of that orthodox school who regard guests as a nuisance. His only chance now was Stirk, on the far side of the hills, and a good 6 miles away. The map marked an inn at Stirk. The pedestrian was too experienced to build any very sanguine hopes on this, but there seemed nothing else within range. He walked fairly fast and doggedly, without looking much about him, like a man trying to shorten the way with some interesting train of thought. He was tall, but a little round-shouldered, about 35 to 40 years of age, and dressed with that particular kind of shabbiness which marks a member of the intelligentsia on holiday. He might easily have been mistaken for a doctor or a schoolmaster at first sight, though he had not the man-of-the-world air of the one or the indefinable breeziness of the other. In fact, he was a philologist and a fellow of a Cambridge college. His name was Ransom. He had hoped, when he left Naderby, that he might find a night's lodging at some friendly farm before he had walked as far as Stirk. But the land this side of the hill seemed almost uninhabited. It was a desolate, featureless sort of country, mainly devoted to cabbage and turnip, with poor hedges and few trees. It attracted no visitors like the richer country south of Naderby, and it was protected by the hills from the industrial areas beyond Stirk. As the evening drew in and the noise of the birds came to an end, it grew more silent than an English landscape usually is. The noise of his own feet on the metalled road became irritating. He had walked thus for a matter of 2 miles when he became aware of a light ahead. He was close under the hills by now, and it was nearly dark, so that he still cherished hopes of a substantial farmhouse until he was quite close to the real origin of the light, which proved to be a very small cottage of ugly 19th-century brick. A woman darted out of the open doorway as he approached it and almost collided with him.
"I beg your pardon, sir," she said. "I thought it was my Harry."
Ransom asked her if there was any place nearer than Stirk where he might possibly get a bed.
"Oh, no, sir," said the woman. "Not nearer than Stirk. I dare say they might fix you up at Naderby."
She spoke in a humbly fretful voice, as if her mind were intent on something else. Ransom explained that he had already tried Naderby.
"Well, then I don't know, I'm sure, sir," she replied. "There isn't hardly any house before Stirk, not what you want. There's only the Rise, where my Harry works, and I thought you was coming from that way, sir, and that's why I come out when I heard you, thinking it might be him. He ought to be home this long time."
"The Rise," said Ransom. "What's that, a farm? Would they put me up?"
"Oh, no, sir. You see, there's no one there now except the professor and the gentleman from London, not since Miss Alice died. They wouldn't do anything like that, sir. They don't even keep any servants, except my Harry for doing the furnace like, and he's not in the house."
"What's this professor's name?" asked Ransom, with a faint hope.
"I don't know, I'm sure, sir," said the woman. "The other gentleman's Mr. Devine, he is, and Harry says the other gentleman is a professor. He don't know much about it, you see, sir, being a little simple, and that's why I don't like him coming home so late, and they said they'd always send him home at 6 o'clock. It isn't as if he didn't do a good day's work, either."
The monotonous voice and the limited range of the woman's vocabulary did not express much emotion, but Ransom was standing sufficiently near to perceive that she was trembling and nearly crying. It occurred to him that he ought to call on the mysterious professor and ask for the boy to be sent home. And it occurred to him just a fraction of a second later that once he were inside the house, among men of his own profession, he might very reasonably accept the offer of a night's hospitality.